you have to take some. You were first, and then...
I was just wondering if you could elaborate on what you think the relationship between Judaism and anarchism. You started to talk about it, but then you said that you weren't going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But you brought it up. Why did you bring it up?
Well, because I've had various conversations this weekend about it. And so, I say, if you want to read that book, that's fine. I don't think I can, at this point, elaborate on the... I don't think it's relevant to this, what this talk is meant to be about.
But why did you bring it up as a tension within American anarchism?
Because I thought I could elaborate on it when this talk was first mooted. And I'm now withdrawing that position. It'll be next year.
I get that, because, I mean, there's this total tension, you know, in your talk, which it makes it so fascinating and interesting. I mean, you have this really awkward, prickly character. And... I think that has a lot to do with, you know, displacement. And I'm just saying, I was born in Ireland. You know, I came to Canada. I went to Canada when I was 20. So I've lived the same thing that you're talking about, you know, like displacement, you know, and all the stuff that we grew up with, and the class structure that we grew up with, and the way that class is lived in Ireland and Scotland is very different from the way it's lived in North America. And it's, you know, it's this kind of tension that, you know, I hear, you know, between these two experiences. So the notion of displacement and moving would seem to me, you know, something that maybe you should talk a little bit more about, but you don't. Instead of talking about displacement and movement and the kind of tensions, you know, that we both in fact lived through, what you want to talk about is an essential core, right? And you want to hang on to this essential core, which is, you know, for you, the self-emancipation of the working class. So I think there's this, you know, enormous tension in how you speak, which I think has to do with and I don't know you very well, but we've talked a little bit, you know, with the displacement that you've lived through in your own life. And then at the same time, wanting this essence, wanting this core, you know, wanting us all to agree on what anarchism is, where, you know, in fact, that's not been my life, and it's probably not been your life. Your life has been emigration, displacement, movement, adoption, and maybe, you know, maybe you should talk more about that.
Early on in your talk, you said something, like you were talking about that anarchism classically is the emancipation of the working class, and that feminism and isn't really a part of it. And
it's not what I said.
It's not what you said. I'm sorry, then maybe you want to restate that, because that's a draw to that.
I think it's first, and I guess to partly answer what you're saying. If we're going to call ourselves anarchists, anarchist must mean something. Otherwise, it's not anarchism, it's whatever. So we have to have a definition of anarchism. I'm saying there are certain things which are anarchism. There are certain things which may or may not be things which anarchism is in agreement with or feeds upon. But that's not the core of what makes anarchism. Lots of people are anti-capitalist, for example. They're not anarchists. Lots of people may be queer. They're not anarchists, necessarily. These things may or may not be important to anarchism or feed into it or influence it or be a part of it. That's not the core of anarchism. So what I'm saying is there must be, if we're going to use the term anarchism, it must have some meaning, which is different from anti-capitalism, anti-fascist, pro-queer. There must be eco-friendly. What is that core? What differentiates us from Marxists, who are also anti-capitalists? What differentiates us from feminists, who may, again, which can run the gamut from whatever? Again, how people come to their anarchism may be influenced by their particular situation. I have many queer friends and allies who came to their anarchism because of their experience of being gay or how they grew up or whatever. But being gay doesn't make them... That's not why they are anarchists. That may be part of the road which they came to their anarchism, if that makes sense. That doesn't make them anarchist any more than being gay makes you a log cabin Republican. So what is it that makes one an anarchist as opposed to a feminist, a syndicalist? There's lots of syndicalism which is not anarchist. I mean, you take any hyphen you want to add to anarchism, there's plenty of folks who use that particular hyphen who are not anarchists. So what is it that is anarchism? I gave you what I think is what makes anarchism, again. That's what I believe. People can believe that or not, I guess.
I think that anarchism is something different for everybody. And I think that it includes our history of anarchism, so what, you know, people who are anarchists did before us. But I think that to essentialize it to be all about class kind of is essentializing. And I think that anarchism has to include more of a kind of, you know, opposition to domination, to all forms of domination, as a kind of more something that I would say is essential to anarchism. And that includes in terms of class, gender, sexual orientation, and all kinds of, you know, like the environment and all kinds of other ways in which domination is experienced in the world. And so I think class is a huge part of it. And, you know, like worker self-emancipation, of course, is like hugely important to the anarchist movement, but I don't think it is the only thing in the anarchist movement. And so I guess if I were to pose a question, then you said there were two things, and you talked mostly about class and worker self-management, but the other one you said was, I think, something about a specific way of organizing ourselves. So I think maybe some of these other things might be a part of the specific way we organize ourselves. So if you could say maybe more about what you see as that. But I think that if we did a go around here, which I'm not suggesting we do, but that everyone would say that anarchism for them, there's like an issue that is more important than others in anarchism. And so I think that so it includes all of that experience and all of those ways of seeing it.
I agree with you that you were saying that anarchism needs some central sort of core concepts. I don't think it can mean a different thing to every single person. I think that's sort of where we have some problems. But what are those central core concepts? Are they the emancipation of the working class, or is it something broader? Like, I didn't catch your name, but you said, you know, the sort of against all forms of domination. I think that better reflects a broader understanding of the society that we live in. Not just, you know, 100 years ago when anarchists were trying to push towards a better society, but today as well, we're sort of understanding different forms of oppression, different forms of domination in different ways. And I think we're sort of understanding core concepts that need to be and should have been 100 years ago a part of anarchism. And we're sort of adding on to anarchism as throughout history. And it sounded to me that you sort of place anarchism in the past and that we have to pull from specifically that. And I think it's been really positive how anarchism has changed, how it's brought out a feminist politics and ecological politics and all these things that I think fit very importantly into anarchism.
I didn't want to interrupt this already. You tell me if I'm wrong, but I was sort of thinking about what you said about the media, go figure, and the press conference and anarchism press conferences, which is really different even from 10 years ago, right? I mean, a lot of that concept of anarchists being at press conferences is because of what you're saying in this moment and the stuff that's happened since Seattle, to make it simple. And I think that's something really significant to think about, and think about what it means in terms of how we choose to interact with the media, not just how we learn to communicate in appropriate ways to talk about our platform in an interview. And what I think about a lot is this example that I find really fascinating of when reports from Genoa last summer and it was on NPR, and I think it was played on some Pacifica stations, too, by Sylvia Pagioli, who's like an NPR news reporter, Italian woman, and she had this really kind of funny, inflammatory story about the Black Bloc, and all these, like, freaked-out definitions of what the Black Bloc is, and then it starts sort of making these associations with terrorist groups, and that it was an assumption that the Black Bloc is this one group, and they felt that they, like, probably started in Germany, and they're just traveling around to all these protests and stuff, and we can all, like, think about our interpretations of why they might be feeding that flame, right? And also just the fact of the matter is it was recording. She felt she was revealing something important to the media, to our society, in this way that people gather their information and make their opinions about. And I heard it, and I just laughed, because I thought that was funny, because I thought, wow, the black block is incredibly effective, because the point is to not reveal identity and to not know a particular tactic in a particular moment, and that's really effective. And the editors of Anarchy magazine, for whatever, you know, that position is there, it's certainly a representation to people who make, you know, looking for anarchism. It's the title of the magazine, people come to it. They wrote a letter to NPR, explaining what the black bloc was and how they were wrong in their reporting. And I just thought, that's like something that I think is really important to think about, actually. Is that an important position as anarchists, and as that voice that was taking on a representational voice in anarchism to correct the mainstream media about what something like the black bloc is, which is, as far as I understand it, not supposed to be revealed and transparent about what and who the black bloc is, right? So I think those become these problematic things when we get caught up in this new place that anarchism is, and this limelight onto the movement, and then what these goals are for this movement, right? Because it makes a lot of sense in our in North American society, particularly the way information and change occurs is very much through mediated forms, through media. You get your word out, you let more people know about it. That's certainly why the IMCs and such have erupted out of our movement. So I just think in that problematic that you brought up, sorry, in that, so problematic, in that number that you brought up, I think it's a really deep question, actually, in terms of shaping and thinking and defining who we are in the relationship to what we're doing as a growing movement. And what that means to grow from a movement that's been very subcultural and underground and all those kinds of things. And the dangers, the issues, the problems, the positive things, the good things that can happen from that. And I think it needs like really careful thinking from all the different people in their communities and their affinity groups and their wherever about how they want to interact and negotiate that position.
I have a couple things to say, but now that just made me think of something I want to say more. I think that as much as I think that Black Bloc tactics and the IMC have accomplished some important things. In a lot of ways, Black Bloc's not an institution, but those two sort of recognizable faces of anarchism, to me, are a lot of what makes anarchism sort of irrelevant in a lot of ways right now, because it's so, I mean, the IMC with its sort of open news wire, open publishing, no accountability model that, you know, not everyone in the IMC believes in that. Some people are trying to change that, but that there isn't like a clear, you know, editorial voice behind it, and the Black Bloc is this sort of faceless mass of people that, you know, in classical anarchism, there was this tradition of, you know, speaking and engaging people, and, you know, these great thinkers that would get up there and inspire people, and that's really been lost. There's no tradition of public speaking in anarchism anymore. It's just this, you know, faceless mob of people dressed in black. And I think, aside from the, aside from the middle class aspect of that, which, you know, isn't always true, I think that makes it fairly unapproachable in a lot of ways. I think that, and it makes it, I don't know, I guess that's a problem that I see with the anarchist movement, is a lack of interest in, you know, in leadership, in, not leadership in the authoritarian sense, but, you know, yeah, I'm not saying this very well, because it just popped in my head listening to her speak, but I think that those two institutions really, really, you know, exemplify that sort of faceless, you know, aspect of it. I don't know if that...
my question is a little bit off the subject of what we're talking about. How do we teach people who grow up in the middle class lifestyle what it's like to not grow up in a middle class lifestyle and and have class imposed upon you by your birth? How do you teach people to really feel that way instead of just having the problems that we have now, where here's the example of a miners' strike, where the anarchists couldn't even enter, be with the miners. Couldn't even organize with them, I guess. How do we address that? Work with the lower class, I guess.
I'll come back to that in a sec. There's a couple of folks.
I just wanted to say that I think, I guess a lot of the work that I see as needing to happen to develop a core that we can say defines anarchism is thinking about what an anarchist ethic means, and looking at what you refer to as classic anarchism, and looking at what we envision anarchism to be, what we want, like what the goals are, and then thinking about what kind of an ethic we can develop that would guide practice as well as theory, but having a more coherent set of values to work with. Like, for example, if we think about transparency, is transparency an anarchist value? And if it is, that would really guide our actions in a certain way. And if it isn't, then that has different kinds of connotations. And I think that's a really important part of thinking about what anarchism means.
Yeah, I'm just going to just quickly disagree with you on the one, obviously, Black Bloc not being an institution, but classical anarchism for a long period was propagated by the D, was very, very, very widespread use tactic, and that makes Black Bloc look like a walking park. You know what I'm saying? So we do have speakers now, not nearly as prominent and as out in the public arena as, like, Emma Goldman and various people were back then, that really being speaking. But it's not that much different, and Black Bloc is nowhere near the same kind of level of unaccountability as various underground cells. Anyways, that was just a quick point. I just wanted to disagree. Although personally, there's a lot of the kind of whatever single issues I do have a lot of connections with, I do agree that there needs to be a core set of principles, perhaps, that anarchists identify with. And I think that, although maybe not all people that identify as anarchists put this forward, but I've always thought of anarchist theories revolving around a few essential points, namely being complete opposition to capitalism, opposition to state and government, and trying to identify and work out the various forms of oppression and domination that exist in many, many ways. So that, yes.
Yeah. I've been listening to what everyone has been talking about. It seems like a major issue here is like a core, once again, so I just have a question to what I want to read that I wrote down. Does the concept of core, is it equated with something that's normative? And if so, then does, by its normative definitions of anarchism, does it decenter and marginalize the other, meaning the feminist, the anti-capitalist, and so on? And if so, then what kind of problems does that create? You know, does it create these problems such that affinities are not able to be developed and to be created by having this core concept of anarchism? Does it decentralize the other and so forth? And if so, what kind of problems does that create in terms of building affinities? Because it seems to me that anarchism is, many things to many people, that's true, but it's also about what is, and that's an essentializing question that you were bringing up, and also a how. It's also a process. It's a structured way of organizing conversations, debates, and so forth. So there seems to be two sort of principles there. It's an is, and it's a how, and those are two conceptual concepts. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. maybe I'll just say two things that will throw more fuel on the fire. I don't refer to the classical anarchists as classical anarchists. As far as I'm aware, they were anarchists. And if we are also anarchists, by whatever definition, that's part of our history and tradition. And I don't think you can separate. I don't call them classical anarchists. They were anarchists. So having said I'm not going to call them classical anarchists, they're classical anarchists. So just contradicting myself there. Were involved and debated, and you know, this whole plethora of issues. It wasn't, as I say, what made them anarchists was because they all believed in the self-emancipation of the working class. Let's take the Spanish anarchists, the most classical and the most advanced, shall we say, of the classical anarchists. There were Spanish anarchists who were into eugenics. There were Spanish anarchists who were fruitarians. There were Spanish anarchists who were nudists. There were Spanish anarchists who were whatever. But why they were Spanish anarchists as opposed to nudists or fruitarians or whatever was because they were anarchists. That doesn't mean, again, they didn't debate or argue or synthesize or take into account. Again, within Spanish anarchism, there was a huge debate, as you're probably aware, again, about the role of feminism, again, of women, of the home, mujeres, libres, etc., etc. That was a debate within anarchism because they were all anarchists and they believed in the self-emancipation of the working class. Again, I don't know if there was a debate about nudism, though some of them were nudists. In terms of the question that you raised, again, about... To me, again, given the composition of what anarchism is today, I think how do middle-class anarchists relate and act is, given that this is the prime composition of anarchism today, I think is the paramount question. In terms of how do people relate to those that they have perhaps different experiences with, well, how do men relate to women? How do people, you know, of a different... whatever. How do white people relate to people of colour? That's something which people, not just anarchists, but which anarchists have grappled with, and I think they are two of the questions which contemporary anarchism has made some great attempts to deal with. What I'm suggesting is that they should also make great attempts to deal with the class issue. You know, there has been many attempts, again, whatever one thinks of them, amongst contemporary anarchism to deal with the issues of race. You know, there's the challenging white supremacy workshops, etc., etc., etc. There is a debate, there is a movement, there is an attempt to deal with that. What I'm suggesting is there should be a recognition and an attempt to deal with the fact that contemporary anarchism is overwhelmingly middle class, and that brings, in the same way that being white or being a man or whatever brings its own set of assumptions, attitudes, ways of interacting with it, good or bad, and that has to be dealt with. Again, presuming that, however one defines the core of anarchism, we actually do want a revolution, we do want a better world for all of us, that is going to entail that we, the relatively privileged middle class, are going to have to interact with normal people, working class people, the mass of the population. Because we do want, supposedly, a revolution for everyone. So how are we going to do that? And how does that privilege, that class, how does that mean we interact? How does that affect our struggles or what we choose to get involved with or how we get involved with that? To me, that's... Well, I guess to me that's kind of self-evident, but I don't see that being addressed. I don't see being that brought up. I actually see quite the opposite. Every time that's brought up, that's accused of being essentialist or, well, that's not taken into account.
It's like thinking about, you know, the working class, and I'm wondering what image or model you have of the working class. I mean, the working class today is very different than the 1920s or in the 1850s, and some of the differences would be that today working class people tend not to live in tight geographic inner city communities, but tend to be dispersed more in the suburbs. It's different by city, of course. Another important difference is access to education. Working class people, education may be such, but working class people have much more access to education today than previously. So, I'm wondering, does that make a difference? I think it does. And and I think it makes, you know, a phrase like the self-emancipation of the working class, you know, a bit more problematic. It's not that simple, I think. And also, I think maybe, like, within the working class, there's always been differences in terms of historically who took on leadership roles. It was probably people who had more access to education and people who came from families that had more steady employment. And that gave people, you know, the confidence and the resources to become working class, to become working class leaders. I mean, with a changing composition of the working class, I mean, do we still need that structure? And I completely disagree with the idea of anarchist leaders. It's a total contradiction for me. You know, it seemed to me that with increased access to education and people being more confident about speaking in public and developing ideas and that we need people like Emma Goldman much less today than maybe we did 50 years ago.
I'm kind of fascinated and don't really understand with a lot of contemporary anarchism's attachment and fascination with always trying to define contemporary anarchism in relation to what its history is. And I feel like I've heard a couple times, and I'm curious if it seems like you're saying a lot that you're comparing contemporary anarchism to what its history has been and trying to bring it back to its historical roots and trying to bring it back to emancipation of the working class and using examples of things that happened in the past. And I think you kind of touched on it. Like, I think that anarchism will be completely irrelevant unless it does change, unless because the working class is changing, because capitalism changes, or whatever changes, it will be completely irrelevant. And I think it'll be totally out of vogue unless people do change. And I guess I wanted to bring that up because I think it's something that I see all around in terms of people being very attached to the history, and I'm not saying to be unattached from it, but it's good to learn the history, but to not be trying to redefine anarchism in terms of this romanticism of what it has been in the past, as opposed to changing as the world changes around it.
The Yanks.
But I mean, in what way has the world... the world has changed, but there's still, if there wasn't still class exploitation, then there wouldn't be a need for any sort of left. So I think that, I don't know, I think people are seeing that essential, you know, aspect of capitalism remains unchanged, and so what was the, you know, at one point was the anarchist movement really addressing that? And I think, you know, the whole propaganda by the deed thing was not a good part of early anarchism, and most people have correctly rejected that sort of thinking, but there are aspects of that, you know, phase of the anarchist movement that were incredibly positive and that have been lost, not because, you know, the working class has disappeared or something, but because the composition of the anarchist movement has changed. So, I don't know. That's what I
would say. To me, what's important about going back into anarchist history is not to just reclaim sort of anarchism as a class analysis or class struggle, but for me, what's fundamental about anarchism at its core in a way is, and what links anarchism to sort of the broader socialist tradition is sort of the social question broadly. And as society changes, the social question changes, but that the project of rooting out domination or authoritarianism, domination, the project of rooting out domination will shift as the social question changes, as society changes. And we could live in a classless society and still experience tremendous amounts of domination, and anarchism's project would still continue. What I find problematic in anarchism today is that people are not asking social questions, but still calling themselves anarchists. That's more what I find problematic, whether you're focusing on, you know, class, ecology, gender, politics, you know, whatever the questions anarchists are asking, when they remove it outside the social sphere and aren't concerned with the free society, but destroying society per se. But I mean, class to me isn't the hinge in anarchism, because I could still imagine a pronounced need for an anarchism if we ever achieved a, you know, post-capitalist society or post-class society.
Maybe it's more, you know, that there are classes of people that are still dominated. I mean, there are, you know, Yeah, I mean, there are working people that have middle-class lifestyles now, but...
They definitely agree with that, the idea that concentrating too much on the class issue makes it a single issue. To me, it's essential that opposing all forms of domination, is what she just said. I don't think it can't be repeated enough. I mean, that's where we are. The world is very different than it was even just 50 years ago. I just wanted to say also that learning from the past is crucial, and we have to move. I mean, this is what this conference is for, right? I assume. We have to move forward. We have to get our heads into what we need now. And to me, I'm not going to say what the primitivists believe, because I'm not a primitivist. And I also think that we have to get beyond leftism. We have to get into a new area of work and thinking about what we're going to do for to destroy a lot of society and the structure. I'm talking about the structures that society has built that are about domination and to get fulfilled what we want. So that's basically what I have to say.
I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, the point being is that talking about dismantling all forms of domination tend to be buzzwords. The fact is, the only reason why we're even having a debate about primitivists and all these other people is because, largely, our politics and our beliefs have no fucking they're not widespread. like most people in this society, the world, are going to get completely fucked over in shitty jobs. That's class exploitation. Now, however you want to define that, however you want to think about it, in context of our history, it's still there. So it's not a single issue. To say that class is a single issue, it's very common. Very complex. It's not easily saying, all right, these are working class, these are middle class, these are upper class. But there is a class system, and until most people who work shitty jobs come home feeling completely fucking drained, you know, we have the anarchists have some connection to that, then, you know, you can talk about destroying all forms of domination all your mom. We're still going to be in groups of, about, you know, 50 people.
Such an easy question.
I think it's curious that we're talking about these things as if they exist separately from each other, like class and race and gender and sexual orientation, and as if we go through our lives only being one of those things. Like, I think that all of these issues are so interconnected that it's impossible to say we can only focus on one. Like, I don't, like, you know, there are working class black people, there are, you know, women feminists who are, like, you know, subjected. There's just, like, so many ways that these things intersect. Like, if you think of the movie Billy Elliot, right, there's a classical example of, you know, a kid who's working in a working-class family and is, like, totally inflected by his gender but wants to be a ballet dancer, right? Like, if you can't separate these things. Like, our lived experiences are multiple and are so defined by all these different categories, and we go through our day being, you know, exploited as workers, being treated, you know, as second-class citizens because we're women, you know, not being able to get apartments rented to us because we're people of color, etc. Like, we all experience these forms of exploitation, like, all in the same day. You could be exploited on so many different fronts. So, like, I think that it's impossible even to just pull them apart and pretend that they exist separately and then just work on one.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, also with what Lorenzo was saying yesterday, and what he was saying before, I forget your name, sorry, about, like, how Lorenzo was actually speaking about how dangerous it is that, like, the conquer and divide tactic they would use, that they use on the Black Panther movement, that they could use it on the anarchists just as well if they grow, if they were to grow. And, like, I don't know, like, making those differences so clear cut, like there's a primitivist and there's us, like that kind of discourse seems dangerous to me, seems like a dangerous tendency. Like, although I don't know much about primitivism, but whatever. So I don't know, that's like, it's just like the way of approaching the problem of there's somebody in this, maybe not in our movement or whatever, but I'm like excluding them right away and not admitting that there's more gray people than there are like the clear-cut people who can actually be put on the spot that you in. And also like the discourse, if you're in the group who's all anti-primitivists, it like it magnifies itself how bad the primitivists are, and I know you kind of build a wall around you, and I think that's kind of dangerous for a movement which, but I understand your concern as well, but I don't know, it's like, so you think about that?
I think that, kind of take it back to the class issue and whether we define ourselves from class, and I think that there has been for, you know, the past couple of centuries, like, fairly strong, well put together movements that have been talking about class, many of which have not been anti-authoritarian. And I think that if we are going to move forward and be relevant, and if people coming from a variety of different class backgrounds, people who are coming from poor and working classes and working poor classes, like, are going to become more involved with anarchism, I think that the solution is not to sort of renew kind of, I think, you know, while Marx is certainly important to read and very, you know, very useful in understanding a lot of the things that go on with the dynamics of capitalism, I think that it's really, really important to recognize that capitalism has changed and is changing, and that I don't think that people, I think that most of the people who would call them, who would, you know, say, I am working class, are coming from a political standpoint when they do that. And so that if when you're talking about, like, reaching out, quote-unquote, to, like, the working classes or whatever, or to, you know, many, many, like, working people, that I think that most of those people are not likely to identify themselves as being working class or, as you know, as part of that. I think that that's a highly politicized identity, that term. And so I think that kind of using... I would really argue that in terms of, like, making and keeping anarchism relevant to defeating class exploitation, we need to recognize that class exploitation has changed. We need to recognize that, like in America, the service sector is bigger than any other. You know, we do more service than we do manufacturing, and that has major implications for class. And that that therefore, I think that when we talk about, like, the working class as such specifically, that we're not really being relevant as anarchists. And that's why, once again, like, people have said it over and over again, but that's why I think, like, more at the core of anarchism is a critique of domination and hierarchy, which leads to a critique of a wide variety of oppressions. And I think that that actually is a really relevant way of speaking to people if we don't do it vaguely. I think that if we, you know, say, I think we're just like, oh, we critique hierarchy and oppression, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, and I critique your mom, like, what the fuck ever, you know. But, like, I think that when we actually draw out the meaning of that and take it to its conclusion, or, like, okay, as anarchists, we have a critique of hierarchy and domination, and let's, like, actually draw out, like, what that looks like in our lives, then I think we become more relevant for people who experience on the job class exploitation, which I think is also, like, especially in the service industry, is always at the same time about race and gender and educational background as well as class background. So all these things really come together in workplace identity and different, you know, ways people interact with each other. So I think that basically by elaborating more fully, like, exactly, like, what it means to critique dominate, it doesn't mean that there's 1,000,005 different kinds of anarchisms. It just means that there's so much work to be done that we, you know, there's so many people who have taken on a different piece of elaborating what those oppressions mean, but I think that elaboration will resonate with people more strongly than sort of reverting almost to these kind of traditional leftist categories that I would really argue have become increasingly less relevant for the average person, and that most people who do adhere to those categories are already politicized and adhere to them as a political move, be they, you know, working class or whatever.
We're actually 5 minutes over time. So I don't know what time the next session officially starts at, but this one has officially finished, I guess. Thank you very much.